Today's episode is brought to you by Mack Weldon. Mack Weldon will be the most comfortable underwear, socks, shirts, undershirts, hoodies, and sweatpants that you will ever wear. Get yourself some Mack Weldon. All their products are naturally antimicrobial, which means they eliminate odor. And they want you to be comfortable, so if you don't like your first pair, you can keep it and they will still refund you. No questions asked. Ben, give me a Mack Weldon take.
I like how Mack Weldon makes my life as a podcaster more comfortable and easier. It's just nice to be in clothing that fits right, that looks pretty good, even though I'm mostly hanging out by myself all day long in this recording studio. At least I know I'm looking good. But the nice thing is, if I ever do venture into public, you know, go to the store, what have you, I could still just rock my Mack Weldon looking like a boss. I get compliments all the time on the sweatpants and the sweatshirts. They've got a whole range, sweaters, underwear, whatever you could possibly want. Mack Weldon's got you covered. Check out their website.
Yeah, go to MackWeldon.com and get 20% off using the promo code OPEN. MackWeldon.com, promo code OPEN. Do it. You won't regret it. And let's get into it. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I'm Andrew Sharp and on the other line, Ben Golliver. What's up, man?
Not too much, Andrew. I know we watched one of the greatest regular season basketball games in recent memory, so I thought we should probably just dive deep into that game, really discuss it probably for 45 minutes straight. I just wanted to know, what did you think the turning point was in Bulls-Kings? Because about halfway through the third quarter, Chicago is just cruising, and then all of a sudden, just the wheels come off, and we get one of the most incredible comebacks I've ever seen in my entire life, frankly. But then it goes for
naught. I was really curious what game you were going to try to throw at me there. I wasn't sure whether you're going to go maybe Spurs Grizzlies. I forgot Bulls Kings was late night. We should probably talk about Boogie.
Well, Kawhi Leonard was out. Kawhi Leonard was out. That foiled my plan. I was going to go Spurs Grizzlies. It was amazing because like it was sort of watching Twitter was almost like watching one of those earthquake thermometers, whatever those things are called, where like during Cavs Wizards, it was just like off the chart Richter scale, like 14. And then Spurs Grizzlies come along and it's like, well, we're not even really registering any tremors at this point.
Well, it's February. Was there really that much activity around WizCavs? I was in the stadium and my phone wasn't really updating. But, I mean, that game was wild. Like, that was my Super Bowl. I had been saying that even before, and then I had to watch the Patriots win, and I was like, you know what? At least I've got Wiz Cavs Monday night. And it completely delivered.
I think it was the most active Twitter regular season game that didn't involve the Warriors that I can remember in a while. I can't remember a Cavs game against pretty much anyone that had as much buzz online as that, because there was just so many twists and turns, and it was a high-level game all the way throughout, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely deserved that kind of attention. Talk about a great call from TNT. They flexed that onto national television like 2 weeks ago, and it worked out. Yeah, like I think that my biggest takeaway was that both teams, like, it was sort of a test for both teams, and both teams passed with flying colors.
Well, you would say that because your team lost and you're a Wizards fan.
Well, no, it's like, well, all right, maybe not flying colors for the Wizards, but like I would say coming away from that, like that performance against the Cavs validates a lot of the stuff that we had already seen from them for the past 6 weeks. And like to do it against that Cavs team, and that was not like the don't give a shit, it's January Cavs team that we had seen. Like they were kind of hitting on all cylinders for a lot of that game. And LeBron, I mean, that was like all-time LeBron last night. And the Wizards were right there with him answering every punch. It was pretty wild.
You know, I was really excited to come on here and clown you because, you know, the game starts. There's hundreds of empty seats. Gortat misses like 7 layups in the first 2 minutes of the game. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be a spectacular meltdown. Like, I can't wait to just give Sharp the treatment that we give to the Celtics and Raptors fans constantly whenever they get worked by Cleveland. And then somehow they put it all together. I mean, it was an incredible game. And I think I can't decide if I wanted the game to end with LeBron's missed layup so that everyone just panics and freaks out about the Cavs for like, you know, 6 weeks.
Totally.
Or if it was better that it went to overtime. Which side of the fence are you on?
So I wrote about this today. I definitely feel like it was for the best that LeBron hit that three and the Cavs won at the end, because had the Wizards won that game, people in DC would have read way too much into it. Like it would have been like winning a title in February. And
that's a euphemism for yourself though, right? When you go people
no,
in DC,
I was not going to be that person.
Are you sure?
I mean, I definitely would have come on this podcast and talked all kinds of trash today about Kyrie and everybody in Cleveland. However, it's for the best that like expectations are measured right now for this Wizards team, and they need another guy, which I think is clear. Maybe not after last night, but like they can't seriously think about like making a conference finals run or whatever the goal is if without adding another guy off the bench. So in that sense, I'm happy with the way things went, because it was a game where you saw that the Wizards can really hang with them, and we can get into a little bit of that in a few minutes. But also, keep things level, you know? We don't need crazy here.
That was my question for you, because I thought, Gortat's blown layups to start aside, that was an incredibly thorough performance by the Wizards on both ends. I thought defensively they really played at a higher level than we've seen from a lot of these other East contenders when they play Cleveland. Cleveland still scored a lot. LeBron still made some unbelievable plays for his teammates and himself, frankly, but they really had to work for it. But I guess my question coming out of that was, if you're going to grade that Wizards game, you know, isn't that like an A or an A-plus outing and they still lose? I mean, doesn't any part of you wonder, like, you know, can they sustain that level throughout the course of a series to make it interesting? Or did they kind of take their best shot because this was their biggest regular season game of John Wall's career, as he said, and it just didn't work out?
Totally. That's definitely a question, because I think, I should say this, like what happened last night was that the Wizards had an A game, and then the Cavs played about as well as the Cavs are going to play as well. I mean, like Kyrie was off, and that's sort of their X factor, but LeBron was in full-on Hall of Fame supervillain mode, and then Kevin Love going for 39 and 12 was ridiculous. Like that's kind of peak Cavs. Granted, they don't have J.R. Smith, which I think like, As everyone nitpicks the Cavs, people forget that they're missing a starter. And like, if J.R. Smith comes back healthy, it's going to be even scarier to watch that team roll out like Korver, J.R., LeBron, Tristan Thompson, and another shooter. Like, that's going to be tough to deal with. But sorry, what was the question here? I'm still on a little bit of a high.
I guess my question was sort of, who didn't play like up to snuff for Washington? Like I just felt like all of their pieces, like Porter had an unreal game, like all around unreal game. Beal was in very assertive Bradley Beal mode, the kind of mode, the kill mode that we've been talking about is so important for him. I thought Wall played very well at times, maybe got a little quiet at other stretches, but he was certainly up to the snuff. Gortat did what he's supposed to do. And so, you know, the question is, is there anyone else they can really turn to? I mean, are you going to expect some like crazy Trey Burke explosion to carry you in the postseason? Or do you have to make a deal here? I mean, are they now in this category where I've been just like hammering Boston, hammering Toronto, they have to make a trade? I feel like Washington now is basically in that mix because they showed enough that it can be interesting. You know, if they play at their highest level, it can be a very, very compelling series if they get Cleveland. Why not take that next step? I mean, don't settle right now.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm wary of breaking it down as like a playoff matchup, but it's totally coming out of that game.
Are you worried they're going to fall out of the postseason?
Yeah, I'm conditioned to expect heartbreak as a DC fan, so I don't want to like get ahead of myself. But look, here's the thing that I saw last night. Number one, to answer your question, Markieff Morris had a lot of stupid fouls, and they'll need him to if they want to compete in the playoffs against this team. So like him going out hurt them, and that's an area where they can improve. And the other thing is the Cavs, I think, hit close to 50% of their threes, maybe even more than that. That is not likely to happen in every game of a seven-game series. So that's another area where they can kind of feel good. But big picture, the reason the Wizards are a fun matchup against Cleveland, like, I don't think they would ever... the reason they can hang with the Cavs is that Kyrie is going to be out there, and like, you can't hide him against the Wizards, because like, he was on Beal for a little bit and Beal was abusing him, and then you put Kyrie on Wall and Wall's getting the rim at will, and like, you can't put him on Otto Porter. So like, the Kyrie thing is going to be an issue for the Cavs in the playoffs.
Okay, I've got another random question, because you were actually at this game, so now I'm getting to play like the jealous outsider, you know, picking your brain from press row, or you know, the third row, or wherever you were. When LeBron hit that turnaround three, was your first reaction like, oh my God, what a shot? Or why was Bradley Beal in coverage? You know, because it was like having the tallest tight end, like a Hall of Fame tight end, being guarded by the smallest cornerback on the roster. I mean, just complete mismatch. And hasn't Kevin Love been doing outlet passes exactly like that for his entire career, basically dating back to high school?
Why was Bradley Beal in coverage is such a Golliver response to that LeBron shot.
I'm saying it was an amazing shot, but like, didn't that bother you at all? Like, weren't you sort of like, hey, Scott, like, maybe match somebody up who's a little bit taller with him, or throw a second guy in that direction?
You know what? It really did. First of all, we got to go back to the last podcast when I think it was Britt who asked us our favorite in-game memories. That game last night is like right up there for me. Despite the loss, like, that was just wild. And to answer your question, I didn't give a shit about Bradley Beal's coverage on that play, because I was in disbelief. Like, because that also came after like 3 minutes of these guys going back and forth, hitting huge shot after huge shot. Because LeBron hit 4 threes in the final couple minutes, and most of which were 3 or 4 feet behind the line. And so at that point, I was just sort of like about to pass out. And I couldn't believe that it was like, even Wizards fans weren't upset after that. It was just sort of like everybody was kind of in the moment and riding the wave.
Well, you should have been upset, because that was a clear oversight. Cost you the game.
Look, Beal in the locker room afterwards said he should have fouled LeBron there, because LeBron caught it in 2-point territory, and Beal could have like bear hugged him or something. But again, a guy hits that type of a three, and you're just like, all right. And not only that, like you said, the Love outlet pass was huge too.
I just think a real championship team like the Warriors or the Spurs would have planned for that scenario and had a better defense. But that's aside. What do you think of the travel? I mean, the travel was hilarious.
Which travel?
Well, LeBron's like, you know, coasting in somehow, like the biggest defensive breakdown of Washington's entire game happens on like the second to last play of regulation. LeBron's like coasting in completely wide open, like can finish it on any side of the basket that he wants, and he just randomly takes like an extra third step and then blows the layup.
Yeah.
And you know, kind of set it up like, this is gonna be Washington's day, let's throw the parade. And it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, well, when he blew that layup, I didn't see that it was a travel sitting on press row, but I did see when he blew that layup, my reaction was like, it would feel pretty wrong to win this game on a LeBron blown layup. And that's why when it went to overtime, I was like, all right, let's see what they got. And then Kyrie came back and was just like finals Kyrie for the final 3 or 4 minutes of that game. And that changes everything. That's the big takeaway I had with the Cavs, is that like, when Kyrie is off, they turn into a weirdly one-dimensional team where everything goes through LeBron. And a lot of what they do is LeBron basically getting into the middle of the defense and just like kicking out to Channing Frye and Kyle Korver and guys who are real solid three-point shooters, but like still not great. And it's sort of like live by the three, die by the three. And that kind of makes the Cavs surprisingly vulnerable for as much talent as they have.
Yeah, I think my biggest takeaway from the Cavs' perspective was a little bit different. I just think LeBron gets up for these contests, you know, against these second-tier teams, whether it's Toronto, Washington, Boston. I mean, it seems to me like he's got them circled on his calendar. this season in particular. I don't know if that's a byproduct of, okay, you get smacked by the Warriors once and you're looking for challenges to kind of keep you motivated, or what it is, whether it's just Sheriff LeBron, you know, exerting and flexing on the Eastern Conference and maybe starting to hear footsteps a little bit from these other teams. But I mean, they're 7-0 this season against those three teams, Boston, Toronto, and Washington. LeBron's averaging 28-8-11 in those seven games. And like you said, he was masterful. So I don't know. It seems like in some past years, Cleveland wouldn't have even really cared, right? They would have kind of punted, or they would have just shown up. And if Washington comes out with haymakers and Bradley Beal's going nuts, they might have packed it in. I do feel like LeBron's got some of these teams, especially these Eastern Conference second-tier teams, circled. Like, he wants to make a point of building Isaiah up as Boston superstar and then making sure that they smack the Celtics. And he wants to, give whatever praise to the Washington's key guys, and they were pretty complimentary of Wall, I saw, and then smack the Wizards in overtime. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm with you. And as I watched that game last night, I was remembering how ecstatic the Raptors were beating the Cavs in late February of last year, and I really didn't want to be that guy.
No, you guys are definitely those guys. There's no difference between Raptors fans, Wizards fans, and Celtics fans right now.
Hold on. Don't you feel like the Wizards model against them is a little bit more sustainable than like Kyle Lowry going nuts?
Oh, of course. But you know, you're also placing a lot of faith in Beal, and I think that's another question I actually had for you, is when Beal goes into the takeover mode where he's just like jacking every big shot late, what's your confidence level in those situations? Like, how much of it is excitement and how much of it is dread? Because I was kind of feeling both at different times of that game on behalf of Washington.
It's pure excitement. Like, honest to God, it's like 98% excitement, because I just feel like when he's aggressive, he is really, really good, and he can get to the rim, and he's also not taking those like 19-foot fadeaway long twos anymore this year. So when he's going for it, it's a good thing for the Wizards. I would say I am more worried when like Wall gets in his ISO mode, and we've talked about it in the past. Like, that to me is not John Wall at his best. Wall had a good game last night, but he wasn't quite as like dominant as I think he can be. So like, I just think that backcourt is going to be tough to deal with no matter what in a playoff series.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Washington probably has the best shot of these three teams. I'm not sure that they have that great of a shot unless they do make an upgrade at the deadline. What I'm trying to compare is just the mentality, because you know, the way that you're talking about Wall and Beal sounds exactly like the way that the Toronto fans talk themselves into their backcourt. It sounds like exactly like how Boston fans talk themselves into Isaiah pulling the upset.
I will grant you that. I'm just saying that the Wizards version is better than those guys.
Yeah, but you also have the shallowest of the three rosters. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, that's true. In a playoff series, I don't really know how much that matters. The Wizards, if they want to even get to the conference finals, the Wizards need help on the bench. There's like zero question about that. Trey Burke was unplayable again last night. Like, they need a point guard. They probably need a wing, and I'm not sure how they get there, but it is what it is. Like, last night was progress just as insofar as like they went blow for blow with that team, and it was kind of a draw, which to me,
well,
just
no,
like,
I mean, it was a loss. I mean, you're really giving your Wizards, a lot of moral victories here in blue ribbons.
I hate you. All right, just let me have this. It was, all of this seemed so inconceivable about 2 months ago, and as recently as a month ago, really. Like, none of this seemed real. This entire Wizard season is a bonus for me. And it was fun. I think if anything, the most serious, like, sober, objective takeaway I have is that the Wizards probably don't have a chance against the Cavs, but they would be a more entertaining series than anything we've seen in the East over the last few years.
I would really like Cleveland to get both Washington and Boston. You know, however you want to sort the order out, I think I'd like to see both those series. But yeah, I think The one thing that we can definitely say about the Wizards is that they have the false bravado necessary to enter a series without being completely shaken by like a fear of LeBron. Like, yeah. There's a lot of guys on that team that really think they're a lot better than they are, even guys who are good, you know, and I would say that applies to Wall, Beal, definitely Markieff Morris, and you can go right down the list. I mean, there's a lot of guys who think that they're basically the best player in the world at their spot.
They asked in the locker room afterwards, they asked Kelly Oubre if LeBron was the hardest guy he'd ever had to guard. And Uru is like, no, I wouldn't say that. And he said James Harden was a harder guard.
I thought you were going to say he has to guard Otto Porter in practice.
Yeah, exactly. It was a pretty bold move from Kelly Oubre, but I support it.
That's what I'm saying. So that you have to have that attitude. I mean, that is a prerequisite. And we've seen other teams have that, like the Celtics, maybe 2012, 2013 Celtics against the Heat. You know, there wasn't a lot of like, you know, staring at LeBron and being afraid of him.
Yeah.
So they've at least conquered that hurdle. If you had to pick right now, let's say these were the Eastern Conference Finals, you know, Washington versus Cleveland. I mean, what's the result?
Right now, without a trade, Washington loses in five.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Okay. Yeah. Well, then I don't feel like I've done my job here bursting your bubble because
yeah. Well, I'm also like a little bit worried by how buoyant I am a day after that. So I don't want to take it too far. It was a fun night. Awesome regular season game. About as good as it gets from regular season basketball. So I'm pumped. I think both teams have reasons to be happy with what happened last night in DC. Let me ask you this though. What do you think of the love rumors?
Trash. No, I mean, I thought we had already settled that Carmelo's trade value is significantly, you know, lower than everyone should have expected a month ago and dropping fast. I mean,
it makes no sense to me. The Carmelo for love deal is actually so crazy that I don't even think we've discussed it on this podcast. Like,
well, we jokingly mentioned that it was a starting point for Carmelo's trade value back in like December, and now we've gotten down to Austin Rivers. And yeah. I mean, the more that I look at it and the more the Knicks struggle and the more that Carmelo's out there for those struggles, you know, he's reached the point now where night to night, he's not that guy. You know, I mean, I think there's pretty big swings in his effectiveness, his energy, his burst, and that's on offense. I mean, if you want to have a real contrast, let's look at how Washington's defense tried to keep up with Cleveland shooters versus how New York's defense tried to keep up with Cleveland shooters a few days before that. Because LeBron had that unbelievable left-hand pass to Kevin Love in the corner. Everybody's seen the replay. Oh, it's the most amazing LeBron pass of the day, et cetera, et cetera. Went under discussed was how Carmelo Anthony did not even look in the direction of making a defensive rotation to close out on Kevin Love in the right corner for the game-winning or game-sealing three-pointer in that game. Yeah. I mean, Carmelo didn't even take a step. He just looked at it, you know, and honestly, he didn't even really look at it. He just kind of like looked like it wasn't his responsibility. Like there was a lost child on a playground. And he didn't want to be responsible for it. You know, it's like, that's somebody else's problem. I mean, that was sort of what he looked like.
Sure.
You can't play like that to play championship basketball. It's just not going to work. And if I'm Cleveland, I mean, you're picking these guys apart on film. You're looking at, you know, that's Carmelo's level of effort on defense. I mean, there's just no way that's going to work. So why would you trade a proven piece in Kevin Love for a neglectful stranger like Carmelo Anthony? I don't get it.
Yeah, man, that lost child on a playground analogy, you kind of lost me for a second there. I've never actually seen someone just ignore a lost child, but I'm with you. Carmelo, like that, it makes no sense. I mean, Carmelo is basically just kind of a worse version of Kevin Love with a lot of the same weaknesses. And like on the last podcast in the unpopular opinion section, I said that like we should, the Cavs should think about trading Love because he's not necessarily going to help them against the Warriors. And, you know, if you got back Avery Bradley, Jay Crowder and a pick, like those are pieces that theoretically make more sense against Golden State. And you also have flexibility going forward. That said, trading Love for Melo would be straight up insane. And like, I don't really think that LeBron would push for that. And like, I kind of believe the denials. I feel like someone from the Knicks is leaking all this to Frank Isola. But it was pretty bizarre to have that all pop up again last night.
Yeah, I mean, just the whole way the report was presented, it just kind of seemed like we're going to throw this out there. You know, I mean, it wasn't like corroborated. There wasn't a lot of discussion about like why Cleveland would do it. It felt more thin than usual. And I think Frank Isola does a really good job. You know, LeBron took a shot at him, which was, you know, pretty direct. I mean, straight out of the Barkley playbook.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that was necessary, but I did think as far as trade rumors go, like that report could have just been a tweet. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know if it needed to be written out.
Yeah. I too enjoy Frank Isola. He's on Troll Rushmore for me. And I don't always agree with him, but he's always pretty entertaining. So, but the report was bizarre. And then you had the Jerry Krause stuff with Woj, like saying that MJ never made demands like this, which I don't care what you say. MJ probably made all kinds of unreasonable demands on the Bulls throughout his time there. So it all kind of seemed a little sideways to me. You know, I'm like, LeBron reacted as you'd expect. Last two things on Cavs Wizards, though. Do you think that we're kind of numb to LeBron performances like that?
Well, it's possible. Did you know that his stat line, 32.7 rebounds, 17 assists, that's never been done by anyone besides guards since 1983? So he's like the first forward to do that. Obviously, career high assists for him. So, yeah, he just like casually made history, and it was just another Monday night game.
I was sitting there, and I was actually sitting next to David Aldridge. And at one point, like, David Aldridge was freaking out about a LeBron pass. And I like freaked out along with him. But in my head, I was like, yeah, I mean, what? That's LeBron. Like, he does that all the time. And I realized that at this point, I am taking him for granted on like a nightly basis. I think after the finals, like nothing he does can shock me. But he makes this stuff so routine.
Yeah, that's why I go back to what we talked about with LeBron restoring his humanity by going after Barkley, is like reminding people he's a human. He does it with such consistency. He picks apart defenses so effortlessly. He's always a step or two ahead of, you know, your plan in terms of how you're going to guard him and how many people you're going to throw at him and where the help comes from and who's open on the perimeter, that it does feel robotic, you know, and it's so, you know, beautiful and effortless and in sync, but it's, you know, with robotic efficiency. And so I think that's kind of what contributes to the feelings that you're experiencing. But yeah, no, he stacked up those assists so quickly that it just kind of felt like, yeah, of course he's doing this, but, you know, yeah. Could anyone else make those reads? Nobody could, you know?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Shout out to LeBron. And the last note I had from last night is that, did you know that when Tyronn Lue was a player in D.C., I found out last night that his nickname in D.C. was Lou Hefner.
Wow.
He was apparently pretty great with the ladies, and he denied that that was his nickname when asked about it pregame, because I feel like that's probably a chapter. Once you become a coach, you kind of have to bury some of those stories. But Lou Hefner was a thing in 2001, Washington, D.C.
Well, that leaves me speechless. I don't really know where I'm supposed to go with that, but that's, you know, good for him.
Ty Lue is the greatest. And also, like, he's a really solid coach. I feel like he's a little bit underappreciated. I know you're currently, like, fed up with him for LeBron's minutes, but I enjoy Ty Lue as an NBA character.
Yeah, I really hope you enjoyed this game, because he's running LeBron into the ground. And we might not get it in May.
Yeah, that might be the Wizards' best hope. All right, so look. What else do we have here?
No, seriously, Bulls-Kings was a better game than Wizards-Cavs. Okay. You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. No, it wasn't the greatest game of all time. Did you see any of it or hear about what happened?
I saw... It's just so boogie to beat the Warriors and then turn around. I wasn't watching the game, but I did check Twitter and see that he got... First of all, losing that game to the Bulls at home, it's a pretty bad look regardless. But then to get ejected and suspended with like time running out. Didn't he get ejected with 1 second left?
No, I got to run this down for you. Okay, they're losing by 27 points with 4 minutes left in the third quarter. So instead of going Greg Popovich, punting it, you know, hey, let down game. You know, Chicago, this terrible team without Jimmy Butler comes in here, runs us off the court. You know, we were all excited and feeling ourselves after beating Golden State. We just didn't show up. Instead of just punting the game, they just go for it. You know, Jaeger's just all out for the win. They're down 27. And slowly but surely, you won't believe it, but Chicago starts choking things away. So they get it all the way down tied. They go on a 52-25 run to tie the game in the last minute. 52-25. So it's tied. Chicago has got the ball, you know, trying to go back ahead and just kind of hang on. Dwayne Wade hits a, you know, patented step back jumper. He turns around and looks at the bench before the ball is even in the net because he knows it's in. You know, he is acting like he's just won, you know, his fourth title because he's staved off this incredible comeback.
Wade is so good at being evil, man. I can't wait till he retires and we could just do like 100 of Dwayne Wade's most evil shots.
Yeah, I was actually waiting for Charlotte's purple shirt guy to just like pop up in Sacramento, but yeah, it didn't happen. So
he's perfect.
Sacramento, you know, takes time out. They're going to drop their big game-winning play, right? That, you know, do they go for two? Do they go for three? Actually, they go for zero because they inbound the ball to Cousins, but Wade kind of tugs on his jersey a little bit, steps in front of the pass, and takes it coast to coast for a transition dunk. Needless to say, DeMarcus Cousins does not handle the slight touch to his jersey very well at all, and just immediately starts melting down because they're down by four. The game's over. 10 seconds left. He's pouting the entire possession. They give him the ball for a final three. It's contested. Of course, he thinks he's fouled on that too. No call. The game ends, and he just immediately punches the air. Well, the game doesn't quite end. He punches the air with 1 second left, and the game over in the direction of the official. He gets his second technical foul. Why does he have two technical fouls? Because earlier in the game, there was a confrontation where he shoved a Bulls assistant coach as the coach was trying to bring Rajon Rondo away from a referee altercation. So he had one completely unnecessary technical foul early. Then he has a second completely unnecessary technical foul late with 1 second left in a game that's already decided. So he gets himself ejected. By the way, that triggered a one-game suspension because it was his 16th technical foul of the season, even though we're still in early February. So he's now down that, you know, super double secret probation you know, track record where he's going to be serving suspensions basically, you know, as he goes along. So
that's amazing.
And the Kings lost. So that was pretty much the most Kings game of all time. And they let a 27-point comeback go for nothing and disappear in a cloud of just complete disgust. And credit to the Kings home announcers, by the way, because as they were calling this, they were just kind of going after Cousins. Like in the last couple seconds, it's like, oh, he just can't control himself. So yeah, they basically turned in on themselves despite launching a 27-point comeback. It was something else.
This all supports my theory that, like, I think DeMarcus Cousins feels persecuted now and feels like he's criticized too much, but he would be criticized like 20 times more if he played anywhere other than Sacramento and behaved like this, because like nobody in America was watching Kings Bulls at 1:30 in the morning last night. Like, you were probably one of the only 100 people actually watching that Kings game. But I feel like if mainstream basketball fans actually watched him pull this stuff on a regular basis, like, everyone would be sick of Boogie at this point.
Oh, and by the way, he didn't take questions from the media afterwards. Neither did Matt. Neither did Matt Barnes. I think you raised a great point. I mean, would any other franchise or market allow him to get away with this? And you saw actually, you know, a decent amount of apologizing on his behalf from King fans on Twitter last night. You know, oh, well, he did get grabbed. Was he wrong? I mean, he was correct. The refs have it out for him or whatever. And, you know, that's Stockholm syndrome for sure. Like, that's being in way too deep and not being able to kind of see the forest through the trees. I mean, there's no other way around it. And
this is a team that's fighting for a playoff spot. And last night was like kind of a gimme, right? I mean, you can't just no-show a game like that.
Yeah, and you can't punt away another game by getting suspended. You know, and now you have to wonder how many games is he going to get suspended as they chase this eighth seed? Because, you know, right now they're already slipping out of that pack. You know, I mean, the pack is kind of taken off without them a little bit. And any game he doesn't play, you know, that's an L. Like, you could just write that one up. You know what I mean? So if he gets suspended, let's say, for 4 or 5 games down the stretch, which is definitely possible given his technical foul rate, that could be the difference between actually having a real playoff chase and not. And, you know, this is the guy, by the way, who Vlade said came out and said, oh, we're not going to trade him, untradeable. And they were already talking about, you know, a long-term extension for him. I mean, it's crazy to me.
It's awful. I'm going to roll my eyes so hard if DeMarcus Cousins actually signs that extension over the summer, because I'm just sick of this whole arrangement. I'm sick of these conversations on podcasts. I'm sick of Boogie trade hypotheticals. Like, for the love of God, let's just come up with a new situation for DeMarcus Cousins so that we don't have to deal with this anymore. Because, like, you know, like, did you read the Kevin Arnovitz thing the other day?
I did. It was a great piece.
It was, yeah, like, Kevin Arnovitz is great. It was well reported. And I got halfway through and was like, I don't really care who is actually to blame here. It's just like, let's move on. It's so clearly a bad arrangement for both sides. And granted, there are people, like, there were teammates in there who said that he's, like, turned a corner this year. But, like, I don't know, man. Like, stop getting thrown out of games. It's not that hard. And, it's just, it's tough. I think, like, we all kind of, this era is ready to end.
You know, one thing I'd say too about that game, we've all become kind of comeback connoisseurs or collapse connoisseurs. I mean, given all the 3-1 jokes and the Super Bowl, which I didn't really watch, but, you know, I'm sure a few people did. And, you know, all these other situations where, you know, giant leads are getting blown. And what was really remarkable about Chicago blowing that lead, and they had all the, you know, hallmarks of a team that would blow a lead. I mean, you know, over dependent on Dwayne Wade at this point of his career, you know, not enough supporting guys, you know, a bunch of people were going to shy away from the moment, pretty shaky coaching. Despite all of that, the Kings still won the trump card of there's no way they're going to actually be able to pull this off. So even when they took a 27 point lead to a tie game, I still know they were going to figure out some way to blow it. Sure enough, they did.
Yeah. I mean, it's the Kings. You can always count on them blowing it. Speaking of the Super Bowl, though, can I just congratulate you on your Super Bowl Sunday tweet? You're in the middle of, like, the internet's meltdown after the Patriots comeback. You tweet out, DeMarcus Cousins, Isaiah Thomas, and Kemba Walker ranked 1, 2, 3 in getting their shots blocked the most times in 2016. And again, rank 1, 2, 3 in 2017. That's just a great little Golliver nugget as everyone's congratulating Brady on being the greatest quarterback of all time.
Yeah, no, the conversation that was going on around that tweet was, Tom Brady's the greatest. Tom Brady should retire on top. Screw Roger Goodell. And here's a shots blocked against stat. So one of these things was not like the other. You know, surprisingly few people picked up on it. I thought that might have had a chance to go a little bit bigger. I was doing a little extra research on that one. I should have put it out right before the game-winning touchdown.
You really could have done it. Yeah, you could have done it on the final drive to maximize backlash.
Well, in any case, did you actually watch the Super Bowl? I should have probably asked you that before, but
I did watch the Super Bowl.
I just don't care at all. Was that wrong of me?
No, and I know that's how you feel about the NFL. That's, like, mostly how I feel about the NFL. I was actually in New England with family, so I'm not a Patriots fan and was, I mean, I didn't hate the Patriots until, like, 5 years ago, but I was not thrilled to see the Patriots pull that off. But I was with family, so there are about 15 Patriots fans in the world that I'm happy for. And so shout out to them. It was one of the wildest games I've ever seen. I just wish it didn't involve the Patriots, because now we're stuck with, like, more of the same conversations we've been having for 15 years. Like, I get Tom Brady is the greatest quarterback ever. Bill Belichick is the greatest coach ever. I'm just ready for, like, some new blood, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you hate the Spurs too, so no surprise there.
last topic here. We need to dedicate this podcast in loving memory to Zach LaVine's 2016-2017 campaign with the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Oh man, what a bummer.
It is a bummer. It is. As a Timberwolves enthusiast, I am bummed that they A, won't have him out there for the home stretch just to sort of see what they have. And B, if they were going to make a move either now or in June, like, you can't really throw LaVine into a deal like that anymore.
I mean, there's never a good time for one of your core guys to suffer like a season-ending injury, but the timing on this one I thought was especially bad. As you're mentioning, it's taking away key developmental minutes this season for him, and they need him to play those minutes and kind of get a sense for what's the ceiling with the other two young guys. It also takes away a key trade chip, as you just said, now and into the future. And it also puts them right up against the wall when it comes to, you know, rookie contract extension talk, because, you know, he's eligible this summer for an extension, as is Wiggins. I mean, you got to assume Wiggins is, you know, probably on that, you know, quote unquote, no brainer, just lock him up track, just, you know, number one pick, big scoring number. I mean, that's generally how it goes. Super young.
Yeah.
With LaVine, I mean, he was already set up to be one of the trickiest questions, right? I mean,
so
everything he can do on offense, to me, is counter, you know, has been counterbalanced a lot by his defensive liabilities, and that leads to a real negotiation, because I think you could have an agent feeling like LaVine should be, you know, an 80 to 90% of a max type of guy, and you could have an organization saying, look, like, his impact overall isn't quite to that level, and that could get to, you know, be a really tricky conversation over what's his value. And now you can't even necessarily have that conversation because he might not even be 100% healthy by the time the deadline rolls around next fall. So, you know,
hold on. Just to clarify here, he's not a restricted free agent this summer, right?
Not quite. Correct. He's about to enter his fourth year next season, which gives them the opportunity to sign him to an early rookie contract extension. You try to do that usually for your core guys. You know, Giannis got one. You know, Rudy Gobert got one. And if you're Minnesota and you're committed to this core of like Wiggins and LaVine and Towns, you want to take care of those two pieces early, in theory, and keep things clean so you can do it again for Towns the following year. And then you can just kind of work around them on the edges as you build your roster. You know, now the options are you could try to negotiate despite the injury, hope that he's going to come back 100%. You know, maybe he wants to take the guaranteed money just given the injury and you can get him on maybe a lower number potentially. That's one option.
Yeah.
Or you can make him play out next season and then he goes to restricted free agency next summer. And now, you know, maybe somebody offers him a max to try to steal him and maybe you have to overpay. So that's tricky,
tough.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it honestly, it feels like obviously like the rest of this season was not like critical for the Wolves, but this feels like a year and a half like injury, because they're now going to have to wait another year to sort of evaluate what they really have with these three guys. I could absolutely see Tibbs saying, screw it, we're dealing LaVine this summer, and somebody, like, I think there's still probably a market for him, but it's definitely a lot more complicated than it was like a week ago, and it's kind of a bummer for everyone involved.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is there's a test case scenario here where you take him off the court. The advanced stats would suggest just filling his minutes with league-average guys on defense.
I know that's what you're waiting for. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop here and, like,
no,
the Wolves go on a streak, make the playoffs. Yeah.
No, to be clear, I don't root against guys who are injured like that, okay? I only root against them if they're healthy to make my points, okay?
Okay, good. I feel better about this.
There is a scenario where, like, okay, their defense just improves because he's not on the court enough where they don't deem him to be that number three guy. You know, he goes back to being in the part of the conversation like we had, you know, before the season where their core is actually two guys and he's just kind of tacked onto it. You know, that could play out that way too. And so you would hate to have an injury at this time of his career be what determines that. You know what I mean? And that's what I mean about the especially bad timing. And also, yeah. I just hate when guys who have probably greater value than their rookie contracts, and that's most guys who are lottery picks, you know, usually if they come into the league and they're contributing at all, they're outperforming their rookie deals. I just feel so bad for them when they get injured on those rookie deals before they get a chance to sign those next extensions because, you know, in an absolute worst case scenario where this like robs him of his amazing, athletic ability and first step, and he's now a career altered player, You know, that timing of that injury could have cost him $40 or $50 million on his next contract. And I think that's just terrible. I don't think it's going to play out like that. I mean, you look at a guy like Jamal Crawford, you know, another bucket getter from the 206. You know, he played like 16 years after he tore his ACL. He's still going. So that doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, the worst case scenario. Guys are coming back from ACLs pretty quickly these days. But still, to have somebody basically working on the cheap on a rookie contract, get injured on that rookie contract, and then potentially have their earning power, you know, ruined.
It's true. It's true.
Those rookies, terrible.
Those rookies get kind of screwed. And that's a good point that I hadn't thought of. And the other side of this, by the way, is that since we got into our blowout Rodney Hood, Zach LaVine argument, Rodney Hood has played like five games and has been struggling with various ailments. I think he's got a sprained knee now. So I think the takeaway is that like an eye for an eye leaves everyone blind. We're all losers here.
No, I think the takeaway is going to be Rodney Hood will be in the playoffs. He's going to have a great first-round series, maybe even a good second-round series, and we're going to look back on our conversation and say, like we often do, Ben was right.
All right, fair enough. Well, I'll let you go. Thank you for indulging me with a solid 25 minutes on the Wizards today, and we'll be back. Hit us up with questions for Friday. We have a solid batch lined up, and it should be fun. And I'll talk to you Friday.
It sounds good. Hey, don't forget MacWeldon.com/open.
For real, they are good sweatpants.
Get your gear.
You won't regret it. Take it easy, man.
Another great edition of Open Floor is in the books. Did you know Locked On has a daily podcast for all 30 NBA teams? If you're a Lakers fan, search Locked On Lakers. A Celtics fan, search Locked On Celtics. Warriors fans, search Locked On Warriors. Yes, all 30 NBA teams have a daily bite-sized podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team.
It's the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.